Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Now, I hate to go all Woj on you all by tipping this pick, but Zion Williamson is going to be the first pick in the NBA draft. We know this. That was clear from the moment he took the floor against Kentucky in the season opener. It was clear the moment the big fella got up and did this.
They've really disrupted this Kentucky offense.
Jack White and Zion Williamson slamming it home.
If you were still on the fence in the first half of that game, after seeing that, and you shouldn't have been, but if you were, he then wrapped it up in the second half when he did this.
They're really good. Top 10, good pass.
Oh, yeah.
Oh boy. He might have the whole top 10 to himself by the end of the
night. That pass.
It was incredible. A block shot to a fast break to an assist. Better yet, he just pulled that shot right out of the sky, took it the other way, and then he set up the finish. Easy to forget what that night was like. He went for 28. He was 11 for 13 shooting. He had 7 rebounds, 2 assists, and 1 steal. And that was his very first college game. And that was not against a bunch of scrubs either. That was not some D3 school that was being fed to the Wolves. That was Kentucky. Duke put 100 on them in less than 33 minutes. And at that point, it was only a matter of which team was going to get the first pick, not who would be the first pick. But there's more with Zion. There was that time he went to block a shot and he slammed into the backboard. Remember? Not his hand into the backboard. Not his head. His tricep and his chest.
Two players converge. Barrett emerges.
Well, let's see. Who got it? Well, there's no question about that one. Zion got the block. Cam, you can't even call that a steal. That's a takeaway.
Now, when I say not his head, I mean not only his head. My man got up and slammed his head into the board and the rest of his body, too. Do you remember that? Or do you remember that time where tickets to see him in a regular season game were going for Super Bowl prices? Or if you're a true basketball fan, do you remember how sick you felt when you saw him blow out his shoe against North Carolina? Remember that? Remember when he came back and he dominated the moment he stepped back on the floor? All that talk about, are we going to see him again? Did he play his last college game? Then he comes back and he dominates. So yeah, he'll be the first pick in the NBA draft. Rightfully so. There has not been a more, no doubt, first pick lock in years. The question at this point isn't if he'll be good, but how good is he going to be? Is he going to be the second coming of Draymond Green? Is he Sir Charles 2.0? Or is he totally different? Because while his reach and his length are a little less than Draymond's, Zion is 50 pounds heavier. And somehow, he can jump even higher. Like Draymond, he can defend every position. Like Draymond, his motor is absurd. It isn't just that Zion is this amazing athlete. It's that he does not turn off, ever. He's flying at 100% every single time he takes the floor. And here's the other piece of undramatic news about tonight. The second pick is pretty much a lock as well. And you could have started printing John Morant Grizzlies jerseys the night of the lottery. But that went into overdrive yesterday when Memphis made that deal for Mike Conley. They're rebuilding, and that rebuild is going to be right around Ja. Like Zion, that pick was announced when he went for 17 points, 16 assists, and 11 rebounds against Marquette in the NCAA tournament. And if you're wondering about an exact moment, it was when he did this.
Kid wants to play. He wants the ball.
The tournament's two leading scorers. And hammers it home. It's a jaw jam.
Like Adam Silver may as well have stopped the game right then and there, walked onto the court, and made the announcement right then and there. And I know what you're thinking. Hey, Rome, if everybody knows the first two picks, there's got to be some drama at number three, right? Wrong. Because R.J. Barrett has been locked into that spot with the Knicks ever since the lottery. Yeah, there's been some talk of Darius Garland, but it sure doesn't feel like it's anything more than talk and smoke. So at this point, through the first three picks, the only mystery is what kind of suits will these guys be wearing? Does anybody have the nad to pull off Paige's suit from back in the day? Or Drew Gooden's Dr. Evil suit? How about Carmelo suit? High volume buttons for a high volume shooter. And most importantly, does anybody have the stones to pull off the Samaki Walker? I'm talking about a cream suit and a matching cream hat. If I'm a GM and I see somebody coming in wearing that, I'm going to rearrange my draft board altogether. If somebody does that, I'm putting together an Anthony Davis trade package to get that dude. Sadly, though, I don't think anybody is going to go for that, which means the real drama does not start until the fourth pick. Right now, New Orleans has got that pick courtesy of the Lakers, and that's where things do get interesting. For instance, do they take Garland, even though they've got Drew Holiday and Lonzo Ball in the backcourt already? Or do they take somebody like DeAndre Hunter or Jared Culver? Or do they move the pick? And if so, what can they get for that pick? Does Minnesota come up to get it? Does Chicago? How many trades are we going to see tonight? What's the over-under on that? A billion? I mean, there's so many moving pieces. So many teams looking to position themselves, and not just for tonight, but for free agency. Trying to keep space for max deal players, but also be able to fill out a roster. The draft gets underway at 7:30, but it really starts when New Orleans goes on the clock at number four. Then again, we are talking about the Knicks. We are talking about the Knicks at number three. And maybe if we're talking about the Knicks at number three, we're giving the Knicks too much credit. Maybe they do the most Knicks thing ever, and they don't take Barrett. They don't take Barrett. They piss off their entire fan base, and they make the children cry all over again.
The New York Knicks select Kristaps Porzingis from Liepāja, Latvia. He last played for Sevilla in Spain.
You hear the kids cry? Listen to the kids. You hear those kids? I mean, it's highly unlikely, right? Highly unlikely that even the Knicks could jack this up. Highly unlikely, but you cannot put it past them. Especially if JD and the Straight Shots take the stage again on draft night. Just hope that there's another heckler there to tell Jimmy what's up.
Your singing voice leaves a lot to desire. You're a bad singer.
Don't quit your day job.
You're a bad singer.
This is terrible.
This is terrible.
I want my money back. Well, I want my money back. I made good money for these guys.
I just want a refund.
That's all I want.
I want it.
Who are you? How do I get a job singing for a band?
Voice is terrible. I'm serious.
Who are you? How did you get a job singing for a band? Your voice is terrible. Amy Trask. Amy, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, I'm wonderful, and I want you to know I will never, ever, ever get to a point in my life where I don't get all giddy to join you on your show.
And Amy, I appreciate you saying that, and I will never, ever get to a point in my life where I'm not giddy to have you join me on this program. It is great to have you back. It is the third season of The Big Three. It gets underway tomorrow night in Detroit. In and of itself, that would be something to celebrate. But Amy, how much more exciting is it when it's going to be live on CBS?
Absolutely terrific. And I will quote Ice Cube, who at our draft said of our new relationship with CBS, we're with the big boys now.
You know, I'm going to get to Cube in just 1 minute because he is a major part of this. Amy, how much has the league grown and changed over the course of the first two seasons?
Well, it's grown tremendously. We expanded this year by four teams, so there are now 12 teams. We've added a second day of play each week. So the growth has been tremendous. And one thing that excites me, and you've known me so long, you know this to be the case, is our international footprint. Last year, we were in approximately 48 countries, and we're looking to continue to grow our international presence.
We are talking Amy Trask.
And I'm sorry, let me just clear that up.
Please.
We weren't there physically. We were broadcast in approximately 48 countries.
Got it. That is a big international presence right now. In fact, are you surprised that there's so much interest from around the world in the league? How much has that part of it surprised and excited you?
Well, it has not surprised my compatriots. What surprised me is this. When I joined the Big Three, having come from a football, not a basketball background, I certainly understood the passion for three-on-three basketball in the United States. You can't go by a park or a court anywhere here, the beach, no place, without seeing three-on-three being played. What I didn't understand but do now is the avidity for this game throughout the world. This is a popular game around the world, and we are looking forward to bringing it to many locations. And we are thrilled at how many countries have reached out to us about joining them overseas, across the world, around the world.
At O'Reilly Auto Parts, you'll get better parts, better prices every day. We'll have the parts you need to get the job done right. Stores are stocked with high-quality parts and accessories at guaranteed low prices. These stores' well-trained professionals are standing by to help you out. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Amy Trask is joining us. You mentioned your football background, great football background. So when you were first approached about this, a basketball project, what was your first reaction? What went through your mind?
That the opportunity to work with Cube and his business partner, Jeff Quantinetz, was a tremendous opportunity. I do realize my terrific fortune in being able to select those people with whom I choose to work. And the chance to work with these visionaries, they could have approached me about Tiddlywinks League, and I would have, whatever the heck Tiddlywinks is, I would have said, I'm in. So, yep, I'm learning, or I have learned, a lot more about basketball than I knew, but it was the opportunity to work with Cube and Jeff. And then we added Clyde Drexler, and Clyde is magnificent, and it's just a wonderful team to work with.
Amy Trask is joining us. In fact, Amy, Clyde Drexler made that very point when he was named league commissioner last March. He talked about what a great think tank there is within the league when it comes to having access to people like you and Cube and all the others. I mean, I know you just touched on this, but what's it like when you're used to being around really smart people, really creative people? What's it like to be with this group and trade ideas and spend time with everybody involved in this league?
It's magnificent. Nobody has pride of authorship. All ideas are welcome. We toss them around. We laugh at ourselves when we throw one out that's not going to work. And I'm the first person to laugh at myself when something's halfway out of my mouth that I know is not going to be a good idea. But even in tossing around ideas that may not work, we can generate ideas that will. It is absolutely an open forum for contribution. And I will tell you something about Cube. I have been an NWA fan since its inception. I have been a Cube fan since he hit the scene. He is a genius at music. He is every bit as spectacular at business as he is a musician.
That is really, really high praise. Really interesting, and I'm not surprised to hear that at all. Amy Trask is joining us. Now, Amy, one of the hallmarks of the league from the very outset has been inclusion. Lisa Leslie is joining the league as a second female head coach. And having talked to Cube in the past about this, I know that it's about him hiring the best people he can find. That said, how much pride is there for you and the entire league that it's a league that is leading the way in such a manner?
Well, it was a very, very special moment, and I just smiled ear to ear, sitting with Cube and Jeff and Clyde going into season two. And I mentioned Nancy Lieberman. We had to replace Clyde as a coach because Clyde moved into the position of commissioner. Not one of those men referenced gender during that conversation. You are absolutely right, Jim. It is a league from Cube to Jeff to Clyde, all of us, that is going to hire without regard to race, gender, ethnicity, religion, or any other individuality, which has no bearing whatsoever on whether someone can do a job. And I, again, was beaming after the championship last year. Nancy won it in her first year. And after the game, during the press conference, media continued to ask the players about playing for a female head coach, as they had been asked all year. And to a man, they said, stop it. You refer to her as a female. We refer to her as our coach. And now we've added Lisa Leslie, and that's really a lot of fun as well.
Amy Trask, the Big Three, gets underway tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern. It's on CBS. Amy, there's no way that you and I can talk and we don't mix in a little bit of football. The topic of NFL players being allowed to play basketball in the offseason came up earlier this year. And then shortly thereafter, Packers head coach Matt LaFleur tore his Achilles playing basketball. What was your reaction when you saw that story?
Well, my reaction was a flashback, if you will, and I mean that not in the literal sense, but I just immediately flashed back to my career with the Raiders, where during every offseason I would get the call from Al multiple times, he would see that one of our players was going to be playing in a basketball tournament or doing something else of that ilk. The phone call went like this: Trapped, you got to stop him from doing this. Click. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, great, I'll call him. I'll ask him, you know, if he wants to go out for ice cream instead of playing basketball or instead of doing this or that.
Right.
But, look, it is a real concern of teams. And, you know, that it happened to the coach was ironic or wry, if you will. But it is a concern of teams, whether it's basketball or any other activity, which could take a player out for as much as a season or a career or even somewhat less. But every year of my career, Jim, I got those calls. Trask, you got to stop them from doing this. Click.
Amy Trask is joining us. Now, Amy, it's still a ways off, but the NFL's collective bargaining agreement does expire after the 2020 season. It's never a fun or an exciting topic, but how important will this next round of negotiations be?
Well, I may be the nerd on your show today who thinks it is actually an exciting topic because, you know, I'm a nerd.
Right.
But, and I say that proudly because nerds are people too. It's an important moment, and you know, I shared my thoughts in an article I wrote recently for The Athletic that the process needs to be, in my view, far more collaborative than combative. Every single person involved in the game of football, whether a player, a coach, an employee, an executive, a team owner, has the same interest, which is the growth of the league and that it continue to thrive. And I think more collaboration can make that easier. And look, Jim, you know this. The bigger the pie, the more fun it is to slice up because everybody gets a bigger piece.
No doubt. So, Amy, though, how would you characterize it at this point? At this point where the two sides are, how do they interact, the NFLPA and the league? Is there a sense of mutual respect or is it something else?
There was not at the time that I left the league, which was about 5 years or so ago. There seems to be much more of that now. I noticed a tremendous change when Demora Smith stepped in after Gene Upshaw passed away. And look, let me say loudly and clearly, I understand that the Players Association has a tremendously important job to do, protecting the interest of the players who deserve that. But not every conversation needs to be an argument. Sometimes collaborating makes more sense than being combative. You know, there's that expression in business, let's sit across the table and negotiate with one another. I've always thought it's smarter to sit next to one another and collaborate with one another.
Amy Trask is joining us. You know, Amy, you mentioned that it was 5 years ago that you left the league or so, which is interesting because there's a story from back in the day that early on, after you graduated from Cal, somebody told you, you better have a five-year plan. What was your reaction when you heard that?
Well, it was someone very, very near and dear to me who said, you know, you need to have a five-year plan. And I can't tell you my precise response because I don't want to get you in trouble with the FCC. Hmm. But there were some words in there that rhymed with the word duck. Let's leave it at that. Hmm. But I said, I don't want a five-year plan. You know, I'm not Russia. Russia had a five-year plan. And by the way, it didn't work out so well for Russia. I've never had a plan. And that's worked for me. Doesn't mean it's going to work for anyone else. When I joined the Raiders, I had no plan for advancement or growth. I was so thrilled to join and be a teammate that if my job had entailed standing on the sideline and picking up the scrunched up Gatorade cups, I would have been thrilled.
All right, so if you were talking to a young Amy Trask right now, or you were talking to somebody who was just starting out right now, or you were talking to somebody who's making a big change right now, what would your advice be?
Well, I would give three pieces of advice to someone starting out. If the question came from a young woman, which often they do, my first piece of advice would be gender specific. When I'm asked what should a young woman do to advance in her career, point one, stop thinking about the fact that you're a woman. If you don't want others thinking about your gender, it makes no sense to think about your gender. If you want to go into a business setting and have gender not be an issue, don't make it an issue. So point one is gender specific. Stop thinking about your gender. Point two is gender neutral. Work hard. Hard work matters. It really, really matters. And when you think you can't work any harder, find a way to work harder. Jim, I know you've done that your whole career. I can't tell you the number of times sitting in my office, people walk in and say, you know, how do we ultimately get a job like yours? And I say, well, do you notice when you get here in the morning, my car is already here? And do you notice when you leave at night, My car is still here. Hard work matters. And the third piece of advice goes right to the heart of what you asked. To thine own self be true. My biggest moments, in my view, have come when I've been true to myself, and my biggest failures and stumbles and fumbles have been when I've tried to be something or someone I'm not.
Amy Trask, NFL analyst for CBS Sports, spent nearly 30 years as an executive with the Oakland Raiders, chairman of the board of the Big Three League, author of You Negotiate Like a Girl, and Remember the Big Three, kicks off again tomorrow night, this time 8 p.m. Eastern on CBS. Amy, you and I have had a lot of conversations over the years, but none better than that. So
wow.
Great to have you back. It was that good, Amy. You were that good.
Thank you for having me. On the eve of your smack-off, you are top of my mind. Good luck with that. I have been a Jim Rome fan since the inception of our respective careers, and I will remain a Jim Rome fan forever.
Baseball has long been a game riddled with some of the most bizarre injuries ever. I mean, I could blow right through the smack-off tomorrow if I sat down right now and tried to run through all these injuries, so I won't do that. But in the last calendar year alone, Salvador Perez cheese-grated his MCL carrying a suitcase. Carson Smith dislocated his wing, slamming his leather in frustration, coming back to the dugout. Brandon Nimmo may or may not have missed time in spring training, puking his guts out after eating some raw chicken that was not cooked all the way through. So on Tuesday, when Max Scherzer bunted a ball through his face and broke his nose during BP, you had to assume that he was going to miss some time. The question was not, is he going to miss time, but how much time would he miss, especially after an injury like that? And then we got the answer yesterday in the second game of a doubleheader between the Nats and the Phillies. Scherzer was supposed to start that game, but that was before he busted his beak. But apparently getting his face rearranged by a baseball and looking like he went 12 rounds with Mike Tyson did not change a damn thing for Mad Max. Because after the first game, he began to warm up. And his teammate Brian Dozier saw that. Told the Washington Post that he started kind of getting on Scherzer a little bit about bluffing, like he was going to start the second game. He started pimping like, come on, man. You know you're not going to go. According to Dozier, quote, he kind of gave me the go-to-hell look, end quote. And sure enough, Mad Max started the damn game. Broken beak and all. And if you saw this dude yesterday, he looked like a Bob Ross painting. Every hue of the palette brushed onto his mug, black, blue, red, brown. And this is a guy who already was rocking two different colored eyes. That guy, the dude with a busted face and a shiner and a broken beak, not only started the game, but he mowed the Phils. 7 innings, no runs, 10 Ks. The Nats won that game 2-0. I mean, this dude would have gotten all the credit in the world just for attempting to take the bump. Not a lot of guys are going to go out there 24 hours after breaking their face, especially when their job is to stand 60 feet away from major league hitters who could turn one around and smash it up even further. But Mad Max did not just show up for the glory of it. He showed up, and then he showed the hell out. That line, 7 frames, no runs, 10 Ks, pretty impressive on any fifth day. But doing it after bunting a ball through his face is iconic. It's ionic. And say that crap about how
ionic.
It was his face that hurt, not his throwing arm or his plant foot. Are you really going to try and take away anything from that guy for what he did yesterday? Come on. Tough to see straight when your head is swimming in blood, throbbing behind your eyes. And this guy sat down 10 big league hitters last night with all that going on. So for once, this is a bizarre baseball injury that turned into an ultimate badass moment. I've got nothing but shine for the dude who's got nothing on his grill except a giant shiner. Mad Max, freaking gamer. A gamer. This guy said, come on. Like I really was not going to take the ball.
I knew it wasn't that bad. I knew it took a good shot to the nose, but for me,
it didn't matter. I felt pretty good everywhere else. And so even when they were, you know, going to the hospital or everything to get the x-rays, make sure it was more for the doctors to make sure that they were okay with it than I was.
And even then, who cared, right, Max? This guy was not going to miss that start. Matt Norlander is my guest. Matt, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, it's great to be back. And before we start talking hoops, I just got to mention something real quick off the top. It was about 11, 12 years ago when I was working in a humble weekly newspaper office, and I'd kill time during the afternoons working in Connecticut. I'd listen to the Jim Rome radio stream, and it was then that I first heard a smack-off, and so I've been a listener ever since. I know we're on the eve of a massive event here. So good luck tomorrow. Can't wait to listen to it, get it on the podcast there. And is Jeff in Richmond going to be a part of this? Because if he is, I mean, my money's on him. I hope that he gets involved somehow. That's like a top caller in the show's history. So do we know the status of Jeff in Richmond?
My man, you know for a fact how much I like you, how much I respect you, how proud I am of you for coming up the way you have. But have you heard a smack off since those 11 years ago? No, just kidding. Yeah, he's in. He's in, but he was in last year, and he called and didn't get on the air. So I'm not sure. As a smack-off champ, he is invited, but he has not been calling lately, Matt. I'm not sure what to expect. And those would say that if he is going to call, he's going to make the same call that he made 20 years ago when he won.
That's fine. If it's not him, then I want the legendary guy from Boston who talked about Andy Pettit's nostrils. Like, we got to track down that guy because that's like an epic call. I crack up every
Jim
time
and Fall
you play
River.
It,
so You're so right. Man, you are so right.
Absolutely.
Listen, I appreciate the thoughts. I'm glad you found that show back then. Tomorrow is the big day, and I really appreciate you saying that, Matt. Thanks so much. All right, so a big night for you. There's no doubt that Zion Williamson is going to be the first pick tonight. Matt, just how high is his ceiling? In other words, are we talking about an all-star, an all-NBA player? And if so, how quickly?
Yeah, he's got a really high ceiling. If we want to be as realistic about this as possible, his ceiling, I think, is top 20 player in NBA history. We're talking ceiling, not absolutely what he'll be, but if you saw what he did in college, and if you combine his marketability, the megawatt smile, the talent, the fact that we haven't had this much buzz around a player heading into a draft since LeBron James, and before LeBron James, who was it? Like, we've had maybe five players ever. If he can tap into all that, avoid injury. There are concerns about, you know, his body type, the way he plays. Is he prone 4 years from now to have his knee just go on him, to blow on him? No one wants to see that, but he's just so heavy and so athletic that he has no comparison. Like, Sean Kemp might be the closest thing, and even he's not that kind of close overall. So tonight is going to be all about Zion Williamson, as it should be, but I think the draft will be known for that, for the top three, for him and Ja Morant and R.J. Barrett. And then I think you're just going to see a slew of trades. It'll be interesting for NBA fans because Zion's the big story. What does he say? You know, what do we go through with here with New Orleans? But New Orleans has that fourth pick, Jim. Do they trade it out of it? Or were they good with Lonzo Ball? And might they take Jared Culver or DeAndre Hunter? There's a lot of fascinating things there because it'll be about Zion and then what you put around him, because now he becomes obviously one of the biggest stars in the NBA, because I would argue that he was the biggest story in basketball for the past 8 months. How often, Jim? How often is that ever the case where a college basketball player is the biggest thing in all of basketball, all levels of basketball throughout an NBA season? Zion applied there, and as he steps into the league, he'll be one of the biggest things for a decade running, probably.
That's a great point. Matt Norlander joining us. He's part of CBS Sports HQ's live draft coverage. And again, that gets underway at 7 p.m. Eastern. Matt, you mentioned Ja Morant. Let me ask you about that, because the expectation is, of course, he'll go number two. You have been all over him for quite some time. Before we talk about his game at the next level, Zion was a guy who had that amazing hype for years, and he lived up to it. Morant nearly went undiscovered. How do you explain that? What happened?
Well, it's kind of inexplicable, and I sat down with Ja's parents and his family about this, and listen, his story is so well told at this point. And if anyone happens to be listening today that's not familiar with that, I mean, he was not highly recruited. He went to an AAU tournament, and they separated kids at the start of it and said, okay, if we think you're good enough, you're going to be in the main gym. All you other guys, head on over there to that other gym where no one's going to be paying any attention. And it was a then assistant at Murray State who, just because he wanted a snack, he was hungry, he stops in, and he sees Ja Morant dominating in three-on-three drills and thinks this kid might actually be something. It's fascinating to me how he has made this jump, because I talked to Murray State coach Matt McMahon at the end of Ja Morant's freshman year, and I said, listen, is there a possibility, is there potential that, you know, if he was really good as a sophomore, he might be able to leave after 2 years? Murray State put in point guard, you know, Campaign, Isaiah Cannon, and now you got John Morant. The program has actually established itself as sort of a mid-major point guard duo. And he told me, he said, Matt, we have got significant interest already from NBA teams right now. And at the time, this was off the record, but here we are now. He said, listen, John Morant is 99% leaving for the NBA after his sophomore year. And if he winds up being a lottery pick, I'm telling you, it will not be a shock whatsoever. Credit to Matt McMahon and his staff at Murray State, because before he blew up as a sophomore, well before that, he thought that he had a legit lottery talent on his hands. And as we've turned out to see, become a top two player and a rare case of a mid-major point guard going top three in an NBA draft. We almost never see that.
Matt, the guy's amazing. Like, we're rolling beat rolling CBS Sports Network, and I'm listening to you and I'm watching the video. It's just absolutely amazing how explosive this guy is, how unique he is. And then the wisdom has been that New York will take RJ Barrett at number three. There have been some questions about his game recently, especially when it comes to being compared to Zion. In your opinion, how fair is that and those questions?
Not fair at all. And in fact, if you hear any sort of talk about how RJ Barrett was overshadowed at Duke, overlooked, undervalued, it's a crock. It's not true whatsoever. RJ Barrett set the ACC freshman scoring record, not the Duke freshman scoring record, the ACC freshman scoring record. Zion Williamson missed all of those games in February going into March. With RJ Barrett leading the team, maintained that number one seed status, in fact, got the number one overall seed, was a fantastic scorer. Remember, a year ago, had we been talking on draft day and said, okay, look forward to 2019, RJ Barrett was a near-consensus forecasted number one pick. The fact that he drops the three is no big, you know, indictment on him or his game whatsoever. I think he's ready and tailor-made to score at the NBA level immediately. And I don't think there are any sure things in this draft. And I would define a sure thing as multiple future all-star. Even Zion Williamson, I don't necessarily think you'd bank that. If you had to bet your life on it, I wouldn't bet that. But I think Barrett is the second guy below Zion that I think is most likely to be a multiple-time all-star, because he's crafty, southpaw, can get into the lane well, shoots it well from deep, and I think that he is going to walk into a situation in New York where he will be set up to thrive. It'll be very interesting, and he is I know he is ready. I think that you will see. When we look up first, second week of November, Jim, we're going to notice immediately RJ Barrett making impacts on the game for his team, similar to what Luka Doncic did for Dallas this past season.
Matt Norlander joins me for another moment or so. Matt, we know he's ready. In fact, we know the first three are ready, but the thinking's been that this is, in effect, a three-player draft. How accurate is that assessment?
I think this is my least favorite talking point of the calendar year so far, okay? Because it's never only a two-player, three-player, four-player draft. That's because the only reason why this has come up is because it has been a consensus where it's Zion, then Ja, then RJ. You almost never get that going into a draft where it's weeks ahead of time, months ahead of time, the one, the two, the three in order are established. And so because of that, it's a lazy talking point that we fall back on. A guarantee. You look up 2-3 years from now, there's going to be two or three second rounders from this draft. There's going to be four or five guys picked between 10 and 30 in this draft that are going to be starting level NBA players. The trick, obviously, is identifying them. And not just that, but I think the one thing about the draft that does not ever get talked about enough is what these NBA general managers and talent evaluators and scouts, what they're trying to do is these guys can all play basketball. Okay, you do not get to the level where you're a top 20 draft pick and you're going to be a bust. No, it's about alchemy. It's about who you are as a person, the skill set you have, the exact situation you go through, the city that you move to. There are all of these elements that have to click in order for you to be a successful NBA player, because there are only so many roster spots, there are only so many minutes that can get played. So just because some guy might get picked 18th and winds up having 10 times the career of some guy that goes 8th, it doesn't mean necessarily that the guy that was 8th was doomed to fail. He just wound up going to the wrong situation. So I'm always fascinated to see which players get picked to which franchises, and are they allowed to develop? You know, I've had a couple of coaches specifically talk to me about how they hope their guys go to certain franchises over others, because within NBA circles and within college basketball circles, certain franchises have better reputations in some areas than others, specifically as it pertains to player development. So keep an eye on that as well. I sometimes think we just completely dismiss these guys and their reputations and dismiss how good they were coming into the draft, when in reality, it's very much about the situation they walk into and how a coaching staff sets them up for success.
My CBS colleague, Matt Norlander, joining us right now. Matt, one last thing. Bol Bol is one of the more polarizing players in the draft. You have him going to Boston at number 22. Some have made the case that if he were healthy all season long, he would have been one of the first guys off the board. How do you balance his potential with the concerns about his health?
That's the great balance there. And I've got him going to Boston because Boston has three picks. I think it's a guarantee they trade at least one of those picks. And if they don't trade it with Bol Bol and they wind up drafting him, he's the kind of gamble that they can take. But massive concerns on the defensive end, concerns about health overall, concerns about how much he really wants to play the game, loves to play the game. Obviously, most people listening to this remember how interesting his father was. I mean, Jim, think back to what Manute was when he, by the way, Manute Bol used to jack threes randomly and was a good three-point shooter.
It's a fascinating
player, really one of the more interesting players in the history of the league. And it would be great to see his son come into the league and have some sort of success there, but a massive enigma. I mean, to me, I wrote this on my mock draft at CBSSports.com. It would not surprise me, and we'll never know the answer to this, but there could be a franchise right now that has Bol Bol 7th or 8th on their overall list. Like, they value him very high. There could be another franchise that says, you know what, no way are we taking this guy anywhere near the first round if we have the opportunity there. Just a lot of questions about durability. Fair or not, there are just questions about his work ethic and whether he wants to play the game and loves the game. So keep an eye on him. He's a big with a lot of intrigue. And then real quick, Jackson Hayes out of Texas, you know, he didn't play a lot of minutes up until his senior year in high school. I've been told by a couple of sources that there are a couple teams that are in the late teens to early 20s that might be trying to move a little bit to bump up to try and take Jackson Hayes in that 10 to 13 range or so. Keep an eye on that because he at the ceiling, if he maxes out, there is belief among a lot of scouts that Jackson Hayes could prove to be a top five talent in this draft, but no one really knows yet because he's still very, very raw. So to me, the two big men, enigmas, Bol Bol and Jackson Hayes, but for very different reasons.
Really good stuff. One more quick thing before I let you go. We are a little heavy, but I want to ask you about this. Coach K, Matt Kim, on our podcast this week, we talked about his big three for the draft tonight. Actually, he's got four. But then I think about Gonzaga. Now, we know Gonzaga's a power, and it's something you almost take for granted. But if you take a step back for a minute, what's it say about the job that Mark Few has done that you've got three guys from Gonzaga in your top 50?
It says a ton. In fact, I spoke with Mark Few 2 days ago. He is going to be at the draft tonight. He normally doesn't like to go to the season. Gonzaga's obviously had draft picks, lottery picks before. He doesn't really like to do that. But he's even told me, he's like, we're not Duke. We're not Carolina. This is a huge moment for Gonzaga basketball. We're definitely going to have two and probably going to have three, Zach Norvell being the third along with Brandon Clark and Rui Hachimura. Huge moment for the program, without a doubt. Who knows if Mark Few will ever have another year? I mean, I know he hopes this happens, but who knows if he'll ever have another year where he has three NBA picks in a single season there. It speaks to the job that he has done that has been so incredibly impressive. And I know he hasn't won a national championship yet. I know he got to a national championship game. But I'm telling you, and Jim, I know you know this, and I know you've talked with Mark about this. Whenever the end of his career is, whenever he wants it to be over, whether it's 3 years or 13 years from now, we're going to look back at what he built at Gonzaga, and he is going to be a surefire Hall of Famer. It's just completely fascinating to me what he's been able to do, and frankly, what no other program has been close to replicating, maybe Wichita State to an extent, but we got to see what they're going to do in the next couple of years here. So totally interesting. I will add this one thing real quick. Brandon Clark is the second best athlete in this draft to Zion Williamson. Telling you, he's an awesome player, came from nowhere, was not even ranked in high school. If he falls beyond like 12th or 13th, it's a joke. It's going to be because of his age and because he transferred, but he is going to be a 10-year player in the league. Whoever gets Brandon Clark tonight, you will not regret it. Immediately ready to step in and play in the NBA.
My man is all over it. He's covering college basketball for CBSSports.com, co-host of CBS Sports' Eye on College Basketball podcast, part of CBS Sports HQ's live coverage. It gets underway tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern. Matt Norlander, my guest. Matt, great job. I'm proud of you. Really, really well done. Have a great night, and we'll have you back here soon.
Jim, thank you so much. Shouts to Jim and Fall River. We want you back. Good luck in the smack off, man.
I'm talking about Matt Ryan. Matt, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How you doing?
Good, Matt. Good to visit. Listen, when you and I sat down in Atlanta in the week before the Super Bowl, your goal going into the season was to play in that game, of course, but you were still really gracious to host all of us coming to the ATL. I want to start there because you were drafted back in 08. You've been in that city for a while now. How would you describe, Matt, your connection to the city of Atlanta?
It's been awesome. You know, I've been so lucky and fortunate to play my entire career here. And, you know, the people have made it home for my family and myself. They've been incredibly welcoming, and they've shown great support. But you know, my message to them and to all of us is that the best is still in front of us, and we're going to find a way to get it done. And you can sense that vibe when you're around town. People are behind us and pulling for us, and Makes it a great place to live and a really great place to play.
Matt Ryan, my guest. Now, Matt, earlier this month, you and Mike Jenkins participated in a video where you surprised Roddy White. And before we get to the surprise, you and Jenkins were talking about the fact that when Roddy was dropping balls at practice, that was always a sign that he was going to be great in a game. How bad were some of those practices, and did he notice that pattern?
He denied it at first, but then after we kept talking, he admitted that that was sometimes the case. It was funny, you know, he was some guys have this ability when the pressure's on and the light's on and it counts the most to perform at an unbelievable level. And Roddy was that way. And, you know, he's one of the best competitors, one of the greatest players that I've ever had the fortune to play with. And he had an ability, though, when the lights were the brightest to you know, have his performance be the best. And that was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen.
You know, I was going to ask you what it was like to play with him. You answered that part of it. But let me go back to the premise of the video. The premise was that Roddy was coming back to host a behind-the-scenes look at off-season workouts, but instead you surprised him with the news that he was going into the team's Ring of Honor. What was it like to tell him that, and what was his reaction?
His reaction was awesome. You know, for anybody that hasn't seen the video, they need to check it out. I'm sure they can find it, you know, on any of the Falcons social media or on our website. But it was, you know, it was really special. I mean, he's one of the guys that has had the biggest impact on my career, and to be able to break that news to him, to see his reaction to it, to see him call his mom, and to see how excited he and his family were for that honor was special. And I thought it was a really cool way for the organization to set that up to surprise him. I was honored that they considered Mike and I to be a part of that.
Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan, my guest. Matt, also, when you and I spoke at Super Bowl, we talked about your first TD pass, but there's also this story about your first practice. Mike Mularkey was on the Falcons Audible podcast. He said even now he still gets chills. I'm going to quote him here. He said, quote, "We did a rotation with the quarterbacks, and Matt's first play that he got in with the ones, I called the formation, I right, act two, go. Matt turned around, got in the huddle, and I can't say exactly the language he used, but he looked across the huddle and he said, hey, Roddy, go get this mother. What do you remember, Matt? What do you remember about that first practice? Because they're still talking about it.
That's kind of the way I am. You know, in our huddle, you know, that's I'm just into it that way, and I think our guys would, you know, tell you the same. But that was one of those things. I think I was trying to prove myself a little bit too. I had just gotten drafted. It was my first opportunity in there with the ones. You know, trying to create a connection with this great wide receiver, and we hit it. You know, we hit the pass, and we can complete it. And I think there was just a level of confidence that, you know, started with stories like that and kind of continued. That's a little bit of my personality and, you know, really how I operate in the huddle.
You know, so I'm curious, Matt, having said that, the team's record was not what you would have liked, but your personal performance was strong. So as you go to self-scout right now, like, what are the things that you're working on to take your game to a new level? Is it minor changes to technique, or is it something else?
Well, I think at this point in my career, you know, the technique is you're always trying to tighten up and to make sure it's as good as it can possibly be. But beyond that, I think at this age, it's about, you know, taking care of your body and finding the best ways to train and make sure that your recovery is as good as it can be. And I think, you know, that's where I've put a lot of my effort. I feel like I'm in a good place in my career in terms of knowledge of our offense, in terms of recognition of defense. I feel like I'm throwing the ball as good as I ever had it. And you know, at this point, it's about making that last as long as I can. And so that's been a real focal point for me this year, is to find ways to make sure that I'm feeling as good as I can possibly feel for as long as I can.
Then you're working with Gatorade's Beat the Heat program. What is it all about? How do you go about beating that heat in Georgia?
Yeah, that's why it makes sense to me, you know, when approached to take part in this. You know, we deal with some extreme heat and humidity here in the state of Georgia, and to be able to get that message out about how important hydration is, you know, what you're losing when you sweat is not just water. There's a lot of other things that are coming out, and you need to put that back into your system in order to be able to be active and to be healthy and really to get this message across to kids. You know, so that, you know, there aren't any bad things happening as a result of the heat, and we're keeping these kids as safe and as healthy as possible when they're, you know, maybe playing football or soccer or baseball here in the state of Georgia. So I was at a Boys and Girls Club this morning kind of pushing that message, and I've enjoyed being a part of it because I think it's an important thing for everyone to know about.
That's Gatorade's Beat the Heat program. Matt Ryan joining us. Hey, Matt, one quick thought, too, before you go. There's been a lot of talk about a contract extension for Julio Jones. Rather than discuss that, during your time with him, what is it that he and his game have made so make him so special?
Well, he's the most physically gifted player I've ever been around. I mean, his size, his speed, his explosiveness, I've never been around anyone like that. And, you know, on top of that, he's an unbelievable competitor. And I think the combination of those two things, the skill set that he has and the competitive nature that he has, makes him a problem, you know, a real problem for people to go against. And it's been one of the, you know, honors of my career to be able to play with him for as long as I have, and to be able to trust and count on him in all situations that he's going to make plays. It's special. He's the best in the league, in my opinion, and I've certainly been lucky to play with him for as long as I have.
He's a Pro Bowler, an All-Pro, the 2016 NFL MVP, appeared courtesy of Gatorade's Beat the Heat program. Atlanta Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan. Matt, great to visit with you. Thank you so much. Another really good conversation.
Thanks, Jim.
Shredmonton. Tyler. Tyler, what's up?
Romy, here we are. I'm out here, my third smack off, and we're talking about our idiot hipster, Matt Vancouver, got liquored up and ran his mouth off. So, Romy, what is the smack we're coming to that we're going to be talking about idiot hipsters from Vancouver? He has ruined hipsters for life. Romy, it's no surprise that the Cooper Manning of the family wanted to part ways. This dude has been salivating at the opportunity to team up with Mike for as long as I can remember, man. And, you know, lately Matt's been working really hard on getting that scratch to Mike for tomorrow, but unfortunately for Matt, he's liquidated everything he owns and is still $3,500 short of Mike's asking price. Aha, 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 Matthew. And Romy, I know you've been mentioning that you aren't getting any cut from any of the Smack Off watch parties tomorrow, which is fair, man, but I want to give you a heads up that not everyone on your team is playing by the rules for tomorrow. I happen to know a very short man that runs a soundboard on the other side of that glass. Some call him the king of the uterus. Others call him the king of side hustle. Just don't let him talk his way out of it, because he's not going to tell you the truth, Romy, but he's got something going on for tomorrow, so make sure you look out for that. It's going to be a good day, man. I did some throwback picks for Trapper, Silk, and Raider Mike for the big day, so I hope you guys enjoy those. And I went out to my cabin and did them in the back there, and I did that for a couple reasons, Romy. One, because it's beautiful, and two, because I wanted to show Brad and Corona what a real backyard looks like. And by the way, Brad, are you getting undressed in front of that little fat photographer dude again? I mean, it's all good either way, dude. I'm just kind of curious how that goes down, getting a dude to take your pics like that. Like, is it kind of awkward, or do you guys get right into business like that hot sketch scene from the Titanic? You just picture Brad coming out, Romy, and dropping his robe and his little buddy getting all nervous. Yeah, Brad, over there on the driveway. Yeah, by the weeds, Brad, by the weeds. Okay, Brad, yeah, stand there. Yeah. Put it in your mouth. No, yeah, I mean the cigar in your mouth. Yeah. Chin up, yeah. Okay, just move your arm a little bit. Okay, try to stay still, Brad. You look beautiful. And Romy, judging by where these guys live and the quality of the pictures, I'm sure just like in the Titanic, it probably only cost Brad 10 cents to get those pictures done. Rome, let me get the hell out of here so we can have more time for all these scared cowards like Rick and Buffalo to have some fun on Smack Off Eve. So I'll leave it to you with Brad's favorite artist, and I'll see you tomorrow, Romy.
Tyler in Shredmonton. Mark in Chicago on Smack Off Eve. What do you got, Mark? What's up?
Rome, I am so excited. I feel it in the cockles of my heart. I crafted a little poem for you in honor of Smack Off Eve. Would you like to hear it, Rome?
Not really, but go ahead.
Okay, well, you're going to hear it anyway.
Go for it.
Twas the night before Smack Off, and all through the jungle, not a clone was stirring, not even a rat or a mouse. The clones were all home, snug in their beds, with thoughts of vivid gift cards dancing in their heads. Brad sleeping nude and Rick in his glasses. The rest of the clones scratching their asses. When to my surprise, who should appear but a fat man in his big ass rear? Caleb in Green Bay waddled into Lorelei's, to which he was greeted by the barkeep. What's up, balding four eyes? Hour number three comes very quickly. Left better get in now, calling very bitchly. The winner is announced. Rick in Buffalo gets five gur, and Caleb runs to mommy and cries to her. Happy smack off to all, and to all, a good night now. I'm out, Rome.
All right, Mark, see ya. It's kind of like a weak Denlesk's approach, like Denlesk's light. The B.I.C., the champ on Smack Off Eve. Bradley, what's going on, Brad?
Jimothy, what's happening, bro? How are you?
Good, bud. How about you? How you feeling?
I'm feeling dangerous, a little confused again about Tyler's call. Tyler, you might not be getting enough oxygen to your brain after getting your head jammed halfway up my crack last year, but let me explain. I was making fun of you for sending in those lame modeling pictures you sent into the show. I'm glad you did a photo shoot this year. I'm pretty sure you and everyone else who did one is just going to be a bite-off of what I did last year. I'm sure there's going to be pics of dudes in Speedos, but remember, I did this. So good luck tomorrow, Tyler. I hope I catch your call during the first 10 minutes of the show, or maybe if you don't get on, you can call into the Woodscopes and deliver it there. Romy, I do want to take some time right now to dedicate tomorrow's Smack-Off performance to my personal Lord and Savior, Richard Flores, in whom all things are possible, and without whom we would never know every item on the menu at Hennessy's Tavern in Dana Point for the Smack-Off watch party tomorrow. Guys, if you need any clarification, I believe if he gets on the air tomorrow, Rich's call is just going to be reading through the Hennessy's menu until he gets run. He's going to start with the apps. Hopefully Alvin at least lets him get through the lunch section before he drops the hammer. Maybe he'll get lucky and get all the way into dinner. I don't know, Jim. Jim, I saw some lame on Twitter recently talking about how bummed he was that he wasn't going to be able to listen to Lef in Laguna's call tomorrow live while it was happening. And listen, I'm here to help that guy. I'll just give you a brief summary of Lef's call tomorrow. Spoiler alert, Lef's going to have multiple dudes in his phone call, possibly even a woman. And I have it on good authority that he's basically recreating the hack-off on his call, like he's going to get Rex in the ABQ in there. That'll be great, Lef. Hi, this is Rex, Jimmy, with an obvious poop joke in the middle of Lef's call. Lef has been begging Hacks for the past 3 months to send him audio so he can splice it together and use it in his call. He's asked Mona, Ryan in Wichita, Parody Larry. You're asking Parody Larry for audio for your phone call tomorrow, Lef? I got news for you, my friend. I own Parody Larry. Parody Larry is my boy. He's not interested in what you're offering, Lef, and he's here right now, Jim, because he's written a special parody in honor of the 25th Smack-Off that I'd like to leave everyone with in anticipation for tomorrow. Take it away, my boy, Lawrence.
This one's for the Laguna Beach belly. Carry on, my big-eared son. We know your gimmicks, now you're done. Go lay your head on Flores' breast, because you're a smack-off hoe.
Give him a golden ticket, Jimmy. I'll see you tomorrow.
How long do you think this dude can keep this up? Get it, Lawrence. Now they're done. Benny in Wisco. Benny, what's up? How you feeling?
I'm feeling great. Hey, Mark, suck it. He went to me, punk. Ha ha! Brad, how many gimlets did you pile into P-Lair before he recorded that song? Our boy is hammered on a Thursday morning. And I also heard Tyler's effort. I'm led to believe that there were some jokes in that call, but the funniest part of it was that he didn't have to add to the Celine Dion backdrop. That song's just on a constant loop as soon as you set foot in that country. Now, Jim, I need to address some recent show sponsors. And, yes, thank you for your sponsorship. Without you, we wouldn't have all these nice things, et cetera, et cetera. But I've met clones, Rome. We all have. These are the type of people who find themselves on academic probation from online universities. So I understand why we've been targeted by a few of these sponsors, namely the Cavo TV remote, because when you watch TV all day like we do, the last thing you want to do is figure out the layout, weight, and functionality of more than one TV remote. And I also get why the Dynatrap insect trap has made its way to the show, because when you have poor personal hygiene, you stink. And when you stink, you get covered in bugs. And if those bugs end up in your Dynatrap, you'll have a snack for when you're scrolling channels on the couch with your Cavo TV remote. And Vivid Seats was a shoe-in, because there's nothing that a clone loves more than sitting on his or her plump ass. But here's where it gets tricky for me, Rome. Who the hell is getting hit by trains? I mean, I kind of get one or two people, I guess. But who are the idiots that made the DOT take a look at us radio listeners as a whole and say, well, we certainly have to remind this group of people not to walk, drive, bike, rollerblade, or rascal themselves in front of this 5,000-ton moving machine that can only travel on tracks that are really well documented, by the way, even blocked by a barrier in most cases. I mean, life's full of decisions. But it seems whether or not you get hit by a train is a decision rather than something that jumps out at you out of nowhere. I can't wait to listen to the campaigns in store for us in the future. Do not have sex with a moving farm combine. And Knife Awareness Month. Knives! They're not hot dog beaks, so don't eat them. Anyway, Rome, provided I don't get hit by a locomotive or sucked through a jet engine while walking my dog, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Twice. Suck it, Mark.
Brother Benjamin. Mark in Boston. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Oh, God, Jim, I'm sorry. Is Benny still talking? My God, I'm sorry. FLCP, that's my bad. He's talking about bugs still? Sorry. Listen, I just wanted to address a couple of things real quick before we get to game day. Benny, I get that you want to be first the day before. I'm looking to be first tomorrow, so it is what it is. Jimmy, I peeked behind the curtain. I've got the folks sending my DMs, texting me. I get it. But, guys, I'm here to tell you right now, tomorrow, I'm turning all those requests down because the guy I have on my call tomorrow is a showstopper. And this almost happened last year, but we had to bail. But
now it's on, brother.
Hey, Matt, man, be glad I didn't call last year or you'd have been bumped off the leaderboard and you'd be sitting next to your ex right now going, what happened? Why? So go ahead and thank me publicly. And ain't it weird, though, how I didn't call last year but still plays the same as Tyler? Tyler, buddy, you are in no position to dump material the day before the smack-off. This is your third go-around. Your history includes two DNFs, which stands for did not finish. AK, your wrestling history, dude, with your girlfriends, bro, just like your calls. Always disappointing. Hey, Jim, most people think Left regressed last year after winning two in a row and then finishing third last year. Me personally, that was actually his best call, mostly because, well, he was hardly in it. I mean, I'm all for Left adding as many sound effects, cameos into his call as possible at this point. Seriously, it's starting to sound like the week that was an Alvin DeLauro production, all repurposed, glitched, and poorly produced. JK Alvy, we all know you're a great producer and an even better reproducer like me. Henry Winkler, Ron Spee, Larry Brown, good night now!
Mark. All right, Mark in Boston. See you tomorrow. To the phones quickly. We go to Matt in Vancouver. Matt, what's up?
Ready to make some history, Romy. And hey, yo, Jason in Harrisburg. To quote, put your money on BIC, you need to actually have some money, bro. And Rome, based on that garbage from Tyler, I'm not even sure I need to justify why I cut his ass. But between his Russell Wilson bag glamour shots, having Celine Dion in his call, or using a Dirt People community phone, basically has one bar of service all the time. All that corny-ass nonsense is conduct detrimental to the team, Romy. Regroup, Ty. I'm 45. You're no Tippin' Pippin. I'm Shawn Michaels. You're Marty Jannetty. Tyler, your best shot tomorrow is just to stick to smacking on the chump. Just talk about how poor Dan in Denver is or how old Mona is, and I'll step up a weight class and make our great country proud and more importantly, make that fat country furious. Talk to you tomorrow, pimp. Peace.
Peace. See you tomorrow, Matt. What are those two up to? What's going on with the two of them? We're going to find out tomorrow, I think. Matt in Vancouver. So let's find out. We go to the former champ, Mike in Indy. DLC, what's up?
Hey, Jim, I told everyone I would only participate in the Smack-Off if I got that $5,001 to be my tandem partner. I'll see you tomorrow, Jimmy.
Mikey De La Creme. All right, so let me just say this again. I hope that's true. Let's go to Southfield. Jeff. Jeff, how are you?
Thanks for the fine, Jim. Jim, I'm officially requesting to be the first call taken tomorrow. I launched the Smack-Off year last July when I shook the jungle with my debut call. I want to launch the Smack-Off the same way. Jim, if my first call was Pulp Fiction, then I will admit my calls since have only been Reservoir Dogs. But tomorrow, I will be dropping Inglourious Basterds. Another reason I want to go first, Jim, is my call runs a bit long, and I am hoping that since first caller gives up the competitive advantage of being able to smack back, you will allow me some extra time, assuming I'm killing it, of course. Speaking of time limits, I'm disappointed in my competitors, Jim. We only get a few minutes, and I see my competitors racing to give up their minutes to tandem callers and celebrity cameos. I would never give up my minutes, Jim. The true king of smack wants more stage, not less. And, Jim, I respect your authority, but in my opinion, the Smack-Off is not a freaking doubles tournament. One crown, one head. If I made the rules, if the number of callers in your call is two or more, you automatically finish second or less. Rumors on Periscopes have Rick making a tandem call with Trapper. If that's true, then Rick's portion should just be some Goo Goo Doll song, since that's a soft-ass move. Rick, you can't say it's you versus Brad and then come at him two-on-one. I guess Rick thinks he needs to add someone else's sauce to his own to win it. I thought you were better than that, Rick. One tandem call that's not a rumor is Mike and Indy and his bitch. I guess what they say about bravado masking insecurity is true. Mike has one last chance to win a solo crown, and like a coward, he isn't even going to try. And he'll delude himself that if he makes one more dollar than first place, that he was the real winner. You can be the king of the cash grab, Mike. I want to be the king of smack. As for celebrity cameos, they might provide a wow factor to some. To me, they just say, wow, I need more than just my smack to get a wow. My wow factor is my own mouth. Rumors on Periscopes have Caleb bringing in Steve Elkington for a cameo. If that's true, then much to learn about confidence have you still, my young, heavily padded Padawan. You don't need to bring the cool guy to the party to stand out. You are the cool guy, Caleb. I don't need to bring a star to my call, Caleb. I am the star. Jim, the field is talented, but they are showing up like scared kittens and fat Garfields. As for me, I'm a starving tiger for the title King of Smack. Tomorrow we'll show the old truth that be it championships or pants, belts are for the hungry.
Good night now!